Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you, one and all, for being with us wherever you are and whenever you are, because people listen to the recording at all kinds of strange times and wonderful places, and that's really exciting. So tonight we are going to have a really fascinating guest. Heather Eaton Mulholland wrote a book called The Encyclopedia of the Divine, Spiritual, and Occult, and her story of how she wound up doing that is just extraordinary. So we'll be talking to her in just a few minutes after tonight's metaphysical music. And I just have to talk about what's been going on for the last week and a half, because it probably affected you even if you don't know about it. People who are sensitive, and that's becoming everybody, because as the planet's vibration changes, it's like everybody is getting a healing all the time and you're changing. So if you're aware of that, you may be understanding the change is going on and feeling it and working with it, but for everybody else, you don't notice. But you get more sensitive to the things that people who have always been sensitive feel. And one of those things is the moon, the phases of the moon and the changing of the season. So last week we had a new moon. So for people that are sensitive, there's usually a window of 3 days, 5 days where you might be feeling tired or spacey or something like that from the effect of a new moon. But it's also the supermoon. And a supermoon is the point in the cycle of the movement of all the big rocks, where the moon is as close as it ever gets to the Earth, which obviously affects tides, and that's water, and we're 80% or more water, so it affects us too. In addition to that, it was the equinox. It was the turning of the seasons. In the northern hemisphere, we're going into spring. In the southern hemisphere, you're going into fall. And in addition to that, it was a solar eclipse. So we had all of these celestial events happening simultaneously. And I, needless to say, because you've heard my stories before, all of us who are sensitive to this kind of stuff were feeling it. What only a few people knew about is that starting the weekend before, the sun gave off its largest recorded solar flare. And a solar flare sends a beam of energy, which is also a beam of particles because of that quirky thing of energy being particles and particles being energy. And that literally heats everything up. So people were getting dehydrated, were getting, again, spacey and tired and body aches and all kinds of other stuff. And then all the celestial stuff happened. And so I know a lot of people, including me, who had a very difficult time focusing and getting anything done for over a week now. So if you happen to be having that experience, why am I feeling so tired? I don't understand. I can't get anything done. I'm not, what is this? My joints hurt. Why can't I stay focused and organized? Don't worry. It's wearing off. We're coming out of it. But this is one of those sensitivities that I talk about all the time, and we got a quadruple whammy last week. So all the people I know that do the work that I do and that are very sensitive are all whining to each other about, oh my God, what a week. And we're very happy that we're coming out of it. But it's one of those things which teaches us in a very profound, very visceral way that we're part of nature and we are connected to everything, and everything affects us and we affect everything. So here we are with our physical bodies and our emotions being affected by things like the sun and the moon and everything moving. as a way of just reminding us that we're a part of all of it. We're not separate, and it's not just us thinking about stuff. It's actually us in our bodies being affected by all of it. So a little reminder, that's today's metaphysical musing. And I'm excited to talk to our guest, Heather Eaton Mulholland. Thanks so much for being on the show, Heather.
Thank you for inviting me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I saw what you were doing, and I was like, oh, this is fun stuff. And then you gave me some of the information about how it all happened, and it's quite a story.
It's funny how life plays out sometimes, isn't it?
Go ahead.
I was saying it's funny how life plays out sometimes. You never know what's around the corner.
Exactly. So I always ask our guests to tell their story, their walkabout, their journey, how they wound up, where they are doing what they're doing, and I would love to hear yours.
Oh, I'm trying to make it brief. I had been raised
make it as long
atheist.
As it has to be.
I've been raised by atheists and scientists and people who stimulated my intellectual growth always, as many books as I ever wanted, all that kind of thing. But there wasn't really any spiritual background to it. I basically believed I was an accident in biology, and when I died, the world ended. And when my daughter and niece were about 16, I noticed that they were picking up books on black magic. And I had never had any interest in that kind of thing in my whole life. But all of a sudden, I was thinking, well, if you have a chance between black magic and white magic, I don't think black magic can be good. But
right.
If you tell a 16-year-old not to do something, it'll probably backfire if you don't do it in a smart way. And my sister and I, and I talked about it, and the only thing they'd come up with was trying to divert their attention. So we started buying books on white magic and spirituality, and we started reading them and talking about them. And all of a sudden, we noticed the girls were reading our books and not theirs. So we accomplished what we wanted.
Right.
And a little while after that, I had a pretty serious foot injury, and I ended up in a wheelchair for a while, and I had nothing else to do but read, and I had a lot of books. And I had noticed that when I read, there were a lot of things I didn't understand, so I had to refer to other things. So I started sort of like keeping a journal, you know, like a definition dictionary just for me. But as time went on, it snowballed, it grew, and it turned into an entire whole encyclopedia.
Which is an incredible, what an incredible thing for you to put out in the world, but it's interesting how it came together.
Well, it's an ongoing experience because I've never quit writing it. I've been writing it for maybe 15 years now, but it was published about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep up with it because there can always be a new version with more information and more people and more interesting stories, you know?
Right. And so did you wind up using some of what you learned?
Absolutely. It's completely changed me into a different person. And now I consider myself a spiritual being. And if I read a lot of Agatha Christie when I was a kid, now mostly it's spiritual things.
So I know that you started telling the story about being in the wheelchair. Were you able to affect the outcome of that serious injury?
Yes, because I'm a very stubborn person, and when the doctor told me that I would never be able to wear heels again and I'd have to walk with a cane, I told him it was out of his mind. And I never really did the physical therapy because I started doing it myself, just moving my foot, trying to recover the muscles, you know. And I had a pool, and I started walking around in the pool for hours and hours and hours while I read books. And by the time they wanted me to do physical therapy, I was done. I was ready.
Uh-huh.
And the next time I walked into my doctor's office, I was wearing high heels. I don't wear them anymore, but I was making a point. We're all in charge.
Yeah, they need to have that happen periodically.
Yeah.
Get their attention.
Bring them down a notch.
Well, I know a number of people who have had very serious diagnoses given to them and basically said, oh, you're out of your mind. That's not happening to me. Go away. You don't have an answer. And found a way to heal it for themselves. So that's the first step frequently in turning things around, is not taking the doctor's opinion.
Well, nobody can heal us but ourselves.
Right. And how did things progress for your daughter?
Oh, fine. Now I have a 11-year-old grandson. He would kill me. 11-year-old grandson was playing baseball right about now.
Did she continue her interest in the occult?
No, not really. But she became a preschool teacher, and she works with children, especially with children with difficulties. She's a very spiritual person without studying a lot of books.
Right. Right. And, you know, that turning point, and you obviously did exactly the right thing. You know, dark magic is about all kinds of manipulation and getting what you want through spiritual methods that can get you in real trouble. And one of the, you know, the classic story is kids playing with a Ouija board.
Well, that happened to us too. My daughter and her friends grabbed a Ouija board and they brought in a really negative thing into my house that I had to get help with to get out of.
Right.
And I already had a little ghost living in my house of a little boy.
And that often happens. The problem with the Ouija board is that it works. And
you can attract very serious things.
Yeah, it's an excellent tool for a medium who is trained to use it, who can protect the space, open that connection in such a way that they control who comes through, call just the person they want to talk to, and then close it all up.
And then know how to close it.
Right. And if you don't, it's kind of like walking to the worst neighborhood in town and going down a dark alley and knocking on a door to see if there's anything interesting happening.
Basically, yes. That's a good description.
And, you know, nobody, especially if people don't know that the kids had a seance and used the board, they don't put together that, you know, one of the kids winds up on drugs and another one has, you know, gets pregnant and another one commits suicide and whatever all the very adolescent things are that some kids do anyway, but they're being pushed by the ghosts that showed up and that attached to those kids. And there are a lot of terrible stories about the outcomes of kids doing random, seemingly frivolous seances. It's not.
My only advice to kids who are interested in this stuff is really read up on what you're getting into before you try it.
Well, and find a teacher, which they really don't want to do. You know, find, and it may be a really old person who's been doing it their whole life and would be very happy to teach kids. In other cultures, in other times, this information was secret and passed down from one generation to another. They would identify the kids that had a sensibility for it and say, here, go and spend time with grandmother, whoever, or with the, you know, the herbalist or the shaman or whoever felt like the right person, and they would be nurtured in their sensitivity and their skills, but by somebody that actually had tremendous experience and learned it from the previous generations. And we've kind of lost that, and kids pick up books and think, oh, well, this sounds easy. This would be fun. I'm like, oh, no.
I know what you mean. It is very scary when people deal with forces that they don't understand. After reading many, many books on the subject, I have a great respect for things that I don't understand for the same reason.
And you must have had a fascinating time reading all the books that you read to pull all this together over the years.
Absolutely. It's been a labor of love. And I love reading and I love learning. And the more I learn, the more I discover what I am and the more I have to learn.
Yeah, and the more you know, the more you know how little you know.
Exactly.
Which is why when somebody says they know everything, you know they don't know anything.
And that's when you should turn around and run.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Learn from the person who says they don't know, not from the person who says they do know.
Right. You know, it's like, yeah, I know a little bit about this. That's about the right level I'm not coming up with the right word, but, you know, the people who are full of themselves and say they know everything always get in trouble and usually drag others with them. So in all of this, what was your big interest as you read all this stuff? What were you drawn to?
Well, what I'm drawn to is...
Still with us? I'm taking a guess we lost the connection, and we will have to get her back on the line. This whole process that she talked about is absolutely fascinating and extremely unusual that not only was she able to, as a parent, figure out what the kids were doing and steer it in another direction in a wonderfully clever way, but out of that came her own interest in something she never would have been interested in, and her own learning about all the various things that are out there. And as soon as we get her back, I'm going to ask her more of the details about the encyclopedia, because I just looked at basically what's in it, and it's an enormous amount of information. It's a 3-volume set that cross-references all kinds of things. So you back with us, Heather?
I'm back with you.
She's back.
I heard your last few words about cross-referencing, and I can say that what the extra value that I tried to put in this book was not only to tell people what certain things mean, but where you can look up more information so you can learn more about it. Because this is 3 volumes, and it has over 4,000 entries, but I can't go into a big amount of detail with each thing, or it would be 10 volumes. So I try to give the reader, you know, a website or a book or an author or somebody that can point them in the direction so they can do their own investigation.
Right. And I think if I recall right, you mentioned that you have an extensive list of people, practitioners,
there are
and teachers.
There are over 700 people in there, yes. There are over 700 people described in there. Many people who are old masters and many people who are people alive today. And it mm-hmm. ranges from everybody, from a psychic to the Dalai Lama, you know?
Mm-hmm. And as you study this stuff, you know, you mentioned the Dalai Lama. Tibetan Buddhism is a shamanic tradition.
Yes.
Which most people don't quite catch if they don't know what they're looking at. And so it's a tradition of healing. It's a tradition of connection to nature and communicating with the spirit world. And I've seen the Dalai Lama when he visited the United States, and he was in my area, but I figured if I went to the actual event, I wouldn't see him. I'd get a better idea on TV. And somebody came up to the ropes and called to him, and they evidently had had some communication. And he smiled at her, and she had a picture of her mother. And he took the picture and held it up to his third eye and prayed for a while and nodded and said, "No, she's too young. She'll be okay." And handed back the picture. And I was
wow.
like, yeah, I get it. And I've seen him do some other things that were subtle healing methods that only somebody who knew that kind of work would realize that's what he's doing, but is just part of what he does all the time. So, yeah, I'm fascinated with Tibetan Buddhism. I don't know nearly enough about how they do what they do. So tell me some of the other bits and pieces here that really caught your interest.
Oh, everything. I mean, I read the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, the Book of Mormon. I kept going with other spiritual books because the only way to really understand something is to get a whole... You can't discuss something with someone if you don't know where they're coming from.
Right.
So the only way to understand what the other person is trying to tell you is to read where they're coming from, to try to understand where they're coming from. And I tried to do that for everybody.
So there are people who look at, you know, in particular things like the Bible and the Quran, but certainly the Western books versus the Gita and some of the other Eastern books, and see them as being in opposition to each other. And I always see them as being very much the same basic principles in a different cultural context.
They're all about human and God. Our mm-hmm. contact with God, however we see God, from wherever we're coming from.
So how would you try to figure out what the right question is?
Yeah, I don't know. My purpose in love is to acquire knowledge and to learn to love. And that's my purpose. That's what I decided that I wanted to do. And as I've learned, I figured I had to write it down. So now I have another purpose. I write.
Right. And at this point, the encyclopedia is three volumes?
Three volumes, yes.
And that includes, how's it laid out?
Well, it has a main encyclopedic text, which is a basic encyclopedia. And then because when I refer to the people in the book, many of them are authors, and many of them have extensive lists that they, of books that are published. I can't include too many. I only have a certain space for each person. So when I talk about the person, I list up to maybe 15 books that they wrote. But then there's a recommended reading section where I can list a lot more. Mm-hmm. So you can actually look in the back at the part of the author and see, oh, this guy wrote all these books. Maybe I want to look up this one or that one.
Such an incredible resource to be able to have all those cross-references without having to look for them yourself. And I'm sure in the encyclopedia as well, do you talk about specific terms from various traditions and the traditions themselves? What kinds of things are in the encyclopedia part?
There are over 30 different religions described. There are different people and words and context in mysticism and spirituality and religion in the occult, which basically means what was hidden information. Not right. The cult in the sense of black magic, or even though I tried to explain a little bit of what demons are or who this guy is, or, you know, people who weren't so nice like Rasputin. But in the context, you need to know who they were so you can understand what happened when people are talking about it.
Right. Right. So you've touched on a very wide array of things, including everybody, including Rasputin, who is quite the character.
Yes, he was a very nefastous character, but he had a very strong hypnotic personality,
mm-hmm.
and apparently he did have some healing abilities.
So yeah, that, he had a reputation of not dying.
Yeah. Well, that too.
So we're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes. You don't have a website at this point for your book, but it is on Amazon.
It's on Barnes & Noble.
And so on the Facebook page and the Empower Radio page and every place else that we put information about you, we've put a link to the Amazon.com page for volume one of your book. So if people go to any of the places where the information about the show is, there will be a link where they can find the book and get the details on the book.
I appreciate that very much. I will happily respond to any emails that people would like to write to me.
Well, do you want to give an email address?
Sure. It's Heather G. Eaton, EATON, @gmail.com.
Perfect. So if people want details or have questions, you can get her at that email address. So we are going to go to a break. We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. here on Empower Radio. This is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files. My guest is Heather Eaton Mulholland, the author of the Encyclopedia of the Divine, Spiritual, and the Occult. And we'll be right back. Don't go nowhere.
The forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great.
Thank
you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
Oh, this coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
Well, that's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest Heather Eaton Mulholland, who is the author of the Encyclopedia of the Divine, Spiritual, and Occult, which is quite a mouthful. And quite a series of books. So as part of this adventure, I mean, you obviously know so much more about the cross-section of all the different spiritual traditions and occult traditions than most people would ever get their pinky finger into.
Well, I did read a lot about them, but yes, there are quite many of them.
Which makes you an incredible resource for pointing people various directions. But Did you find that you latched onto one particular tradition and made that your spirituality,
your way of approaching things? The more I read, the more I realized that everybody has a point. And so I can't just relate to one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or some of them. In a way, I relate to all of them, and in a way, I relate to none of them.
Hmm. That skeptical part of you that you started out with.
Well, not that per se. It's just that religion to me is constrictive. Spirituality is open.
Right.
So when we talk about different religions, there are religions that certain people believe in for certain reasons. And they all have good points. And they all have not so good points. But me, personally, I see my relationship with God as just that, my relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see religion between us.
Well, as somebody put it, religion is a community experience with a set of rules that mostly has to do with how to do things and how to behave in your life. And underneath all of that is the spiritual knowledge of a master that the religion was based on. But in some religions, the transmission of that information is more direct. You know, the master may have written the book or dictated the book directly. And in others, the stories were written hundreds of years later by people that never met the master. And then got translated.
And then you have religions like Buddhism, which don't really have a book, per se.
Right, right. Although there's lots of aphorisms from the Buddha, and there's traditions that have grown up in different parts of the world of rituals that are done in a particular way for a particular group. So all still based on that tradition and what the master said. And that's always the challenging part, I guess, is an enlightened master is having an experience that an unenlightened person cannot possibly understand in any real depth. So the master can teach you how to approach that experience and have that experience for yourself. But, well, there are some traditions where the energy is transmitted, typically the teacher is not going to be there and put their hands on you and say, okay, now you're enlightened. Now your experience is different. You have to find that experience for yourself.
Absolutely.
And in some traditions, the religion says the master is special and we're not. And you shouldn't try and do what the master did. Except if you read carefully, you'll usually find that the master said, yeah, I'm showing you how to do it. Now it's your turn. So it's always fascinating to me. And you, even within a religion, so in Islam, there's an offshoot of the Sufi order, which has a whole different feel to it than most of the other parts of that tradition. It's more mystical, more, I guess, shamanic, and it's involved in doing physical practices in order to get there. But most of the teaching is very, very gentle and about this incredibly loving connection with spirit. And I haven't read enough of the stuff to, which you probably have, to know where that stuff is written and how it's different and how it came about. But that happens in all traditions, I think. There are different people who were either the disciples of the master or studied or meditated until they reached enlightenment, and then they give their interpretation. And some of those interpretations are very loving, and some of those interpretations are fearful, and depending on...
That's the thing about religion, is remember that man wrote the book, and it was translated many times by many different people with many different agendas.
Right. Right. In particular, the Christian Bible went through many, many translations, very far from the original Aramaic than that Jesus spoke. And I always say, you know, he wouldn't answer to the name Jesus. His name was Yeshua, and he was probably called Yeshi. And he spoke Aramaic.
Absolutely.
So the original stories were told in a language that's very, very far removed from the translations that were done later. But anyway.
Well, the Dead Sea Scrolls are in Aramaic, and that's where they took it and then translated them from there on into different languages.
Right. The Dead Sea Scrolls, and then there were later finds in the same area that were also written in Aramaic. And what I always find fascinating about them, it's the gospel as told by somebody else, but frequently somebody that either was there or was writing about it sooner after Jesus lived than the other ones.
And 300 years later.
Right. And what's fascinating is the similarities, because the storyline is still there, but the differences in the details.
And the details make a whole difference sometimes.
Right, right. And of course, because it's a religion and an organization and all the rest of it, 400 years after he died, they picked the stories that they were going to include in the Bible, and everybody is... been reading those. But I have a friend who is a theologian and has read the original texts in the original languages and a lot of first century materials, so right after Jesus died. And talking to her is just fascinating.
I can imagine.
A whole different... She's been on the show several times. Christina Rake. And you know, I'll make some wisecrack, and she'll go, "Oh, there's scripture that says exactly that." I'm like, "Really?" So that phrase means what I said. Well, if you know the original meaning of the words in the original language, what it said was like, I love that. I love that, but it's so different from the conversation that of most people who hear the translation that they hear right now. And for any of the books. And that's frequently true because you can't get the nuances of one language into the other language, much less the cultural understanding.
Not only that, when you're talking about religious books, there's always an agenda.
Right, right. But Aramaic and Hebrew have a tense that is past, present, and future simultaneously. Mm-hmm. It's basically now. It's an eternal now. And that doesn't exist in Greek. So they had to decide whether it was past, present, or future, and they put everything in the future. Changed the whole meaning.
Of course.
So, and there are a number of other basic things that had to do with... the other thing about Middle Eastern languages is they're written with not only cultural references, but puns. And the puns are cultural. So if you don't know what the pun is referring to, you don't get it.
Not only cultural, it's time related.
Right. Well, it's cultural in that place and time. And all of those Middle Eastern languages have numerology for all the letters. So sometimes a particular word has a different meaning because of the numerology of the letters. It's just all of the top complicated. and translate that a few times into different languages, it starts to lose the nuance.
I would think.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of very interesting information that can be gleaned out of these books, but I can't take them literally because it doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would probably make sense in the original language if you could read in the original language and in the cultural, with the cultural references intact.
If I could go back in time and read Aramaic, I probably would, just for the heck of it.
Aramaic, or even the Gita in the original dialect.
Yeah.
In the original dialect, or the Quran in the original dialect of its time when it was written. Undoubtedly would give different turns of direction for all kinds of phrasing in it. So it's a fascinating way that things are handed down from one to the other. And that's one of the things for me about all the traditions that are typically apprenticeships, like shamanism and most of the occult traditions. You learned it from somebody.
I'm a master.
And so it was, you got all that nuance because they were putting you in situations and allowing you to have your experience, but also telling you how they learned what they learned. And it's a totally different thing than doing it from books. And, I was raised in a Jewish household, and the arguments over the meaning of specific words and phrases has been going on for over 6,000 years. There are more, the pages of commentary are far greater than the pages of the Hebrew Bible, and go on forever. Rabbi so-and-so of blessed memory said this, and then this rabbi said that, and then this rabbi, and the arguments, some of it is not arguments, but a lot of it is just, I don't agree with you. and it's been going on forever.
Yep.
That's where the number of angels on the head of a pin stuff comes from. It's like, how complicated can you make the article and how silly a question can you ask? So, and do you understand the question? You're answering the question you think is being asked, but it's not the question I meant.
But again, when you ask something, you're asking it from your perspective and your point of view and your culture and your everything. And the other person is hearing it from their perspective and their culture and their where they're coming from.
Right, right. And a student who is starting out is not reading it and understanding it with the same ears as somebody who has spent their entire life involved in it.
Absolutely.
So what do you want people to remember with all of this? You've, in many ways, you've spent your life studying cross-cultural traditions from all over the world. So what's the message?
The message is that if you're interested in something, find out as much as you can about it. Don't just accept a few things. Question everything. If you really want to learn, you really have to question. You really have to investigate. You really have to open yourself and listen to other people and other traditions and other cultures. And that's the only way you can open yourself to the diversity of this world.
And that's a big part of what they can get from your encyclopedia.
Well,
with all the cross-referencing is finding
a little bit of information about
new directions
thing, but then
and who to look to.
I hope. That was my intention, at least.
Which sounds fantastic. I can't wait to get my hands on a copy. Because it just sounds like great fun. And I know there are some people out there going, fun? Thousands of pages of, yeah, it would be fun for me. I love that stuff.
I love reading. But that's just me. Not everybody likes reading so much.
Yeah, it's not so much the reading for me as much as the cross references would fascinate me. This is connected to that, is connected to that, is connected to that. That's the stuff that's juicy for me.
Everything's connected to everything in one way or another.
Right, right. And seeing that this connection over here not only goes to, for example, the Quran or the Gita, but also shows up in Tibetan Buddhism and, you know, all the other things, that the same things are being said with slightly different cultural and historical twists and turns, but the underlying principles in metaphysics and the occult are the same everywhere. The understanding of how the universe works, the understanding of connecting with spirit is only culturally different. It's because there's only one thing going on.
Understand the universe, yes.
Right. One of the things I say is arguing over which God you're praying to me, is the ultimate sacrilege. Because if you really have come to believe that there's only one God, then how could anybody be praying to anybody else? There's only one of whatever,
only one God,
whomever.
But there's millions of versions of him.
That is, so everybody is acknowledging that's true and has a different way of saying and doing that. And, you know, our planet is incredibly diverse in every possible way, and not expecting there to be a diversity of worship doesn't make any sense to me. Of course there's a diversity of worship. People who are isolated in their places came up with their particular way of having that conversation with God. And then they spent thousands of years working on their particular version, but there's only one whoever or whatever that is. So as far as I'm concerned, the first thing I always say to everybody is stop that part of the argument.
To me, God is love. You can call him whatever name you want. You can assign any religion you want. But to me, God is love. And that's right. It. That's all there is.
And that's, and typically somewhere in the teachings of every religion, that's basically where it bottoms out. That it's love, which might be called compassion, which might be called kindness, which, you know, however it's, whatever words are used and however it's translated, it basically gets down to love, which means, and also the acknowledgement that we are all children and brothers and sisters under that same God, and therefore connected to each other and responsible for each other and responsible to love each other.
And everything else on this planet.
Right. And, you know, some that also somehow gets lost in various places at various times, much to my consternation. What are you doing?
We humans tend to be a little arrogant, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And that's just a human trait. I mean, you can get hubris on the science side of it, and you can get hubris on the religious side or the spiritual side of it. You know, there's always someone who's decided that they know everything they need to know in this moment about something, and so they can make a definitive statement. And that's never true. It's never, ever true, no matter what your perspective is. And as I started to say before, the more you know how much you don't know.
You don't know.
Right. And the less you know, the more you think you know everything, because the fraction of everything there is to know that you've ever seen is so small.
One of my personal sayings is I would rather converse with someone who's read 1,000 books than someone who has read one book 1,000 times.
Right. Right. And, you know, one of the things that I grew up in a household where people were well-read. My dad was not well-educated, but he was well-read. And he read everything. He read philosophers who disagreed with each other just to mess with his own head and be confused. He, you know, he just read all kinds of stuff.
Very smart man.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he could talk to anybody about pretty much anything. because he had that breadth of information that he had taken in, synthesized, come out the other end and said, well, this is connected to that, and that's part of the reason I am who I am, is my dad did that all the time. So thanks, Dad, as usual.
Smart man.
So as an author, what was it like to try and take your notes from 15 years worth of doing all of this and make it into a book?
Well, at some point I decided that it was going to be a book, whether I could get it out or not. And so I just continued writing it in that fashion. And then finally I said, okay, it has to be a cutoff point. Let's see if we can find a publisher. And I did. And then we got it up on Amazon. But I don't know if there was an exact moment and when I said, oh, there has to be a book, because I'd already written another book, which I tried to get published. It's a little book about herbs and magic. It's out on Amazon, too. It's called the Little Book of Herbs and Magic. But I didn't have any... nobody wanted to publish it at the time that I finished writing it. And so when I went on to this other, I just was kind of writing it for me, but at some point I said, no, if you're doing it, then do it right. Turn it into a book. But I couldn't tell you exactly when that happened. At some point
right.
during the process.
Right. I'm just curious what the process was, because this is obviously a labor of love and something that you worked on for a very long time. And then at some point, you had to figure out how to make it into a book.
Yeah, I really can't tell you exactly how the process works.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are a writer and you like it, then go for it. Do it.
Right.
Someday it'll work out for you, but just do it. Don't give up on yourself.
Right. And it's a good message for me as well. I've got three books rattling around waiting to be written and get out there. So I need to get that done and have some fun with it. What do you want to leave people with?
Well, I don't know. Just the message for me as a person who likes to learn is I would love to see people learning more about spirituality and religion and mysticism. And if my book can any way help them to do that, then that would make me happy.
Fantastic. And again, the link is on the Facebook page, the Empower Radio page, everywhere that we've mentioned the show. So that people can find it on Amazon. And again, give them your email address.
My email is Heather G. Eaton, that's EATON, @gmail.com.
Fantastic. So my guest has been Heather Eaton Mulholland, the author of The Encyclopedia of the Divine, Spiritual, and the Occult. And Heather, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been so much fun. And what a wonderful life's work to put out there in the world. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you very much. It's been an honor to be on your show.
Absolute pleasure on my part.
Okay.
So if you've gotten at all curious about who this strange guy David is, you can get more information at househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable way to get in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment of whatever is going on with a person, place, situation, whatever it happens to be, to see how my clearing work may help you with that. If you want more about the show, you can find that at thefarkasfiles.com, the whole archive of however many years it's been. I think it's been 4 years now we've been doing this, is there. Obviously, this week's show will be at the top of the list in that archive. And we've got something going on now that's very exciting to me. Empower Radio is this fascinating small operation and the brainchild of one man, Brent Carey, to put together a platform of all positive thinking. And so 24 hours a day, there's a stream of positive messages going out, and you can get that on all the different audio streaming services. We also have an app, but what a wonderful thing to do. And at this point, to go to the next level, we're going to need to raise some money to get new equipment, do all kinds of other stuff. And that's going to happen sometime in April. It's going to be a crowdsourcing. It's going to be a crowdsourcing funding thing, and we will tell you the details on that. But we would really like your help and support in getting things together for the next stage of Empower Radio. And I'm really excited about it. So that's it for this week. This is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Thank you one and all for being here, and have a fantastic week.